Last week, we finished the discussion about the range of acceptable beliefs in how God created the world. And the next logical discussion is... That was the intro music to the next logical discussion. So that's a good reminder. Let's turn off all cell phones or put them on vibrate. I think that's the intro to Bad to the Bone. I'm not sure. That's what it sounded like. In any event, the next logical discussion is, now that we've established that Hashem is the creator of the universe, now we need to talk about God's possible interaction and intervention with the world since the time of its creation. Because there are two issues that we have to contend with. One is, how did the universe come into existence? And once we conclude that it was a God who created the universe, whether it was creatio ex nihilo, something from nothing, or whether it was from some kind of primordial matter that God used to construct the universe, the next part of the discussion is, what has Hashem been doing since then? Did Hashem just create our world and then decide to frolic with another galaxy? And he has not been involved with our world? Because one way of looking at it is that Hashem has put things into motion, and once God puts things into motion and he gives us the laws of nature, so then we don't need a God anymore in order to interact with our universe, because everything is now on autopilot. The other possibility is that God is constantly interactive with our universe in some way, shape, or form. Now, there are a number of different shades that we could attach to this description. It could either be that God is interventive at different intervals of human history, when he needs to be, in other words, everything's on autopilot except when God needs to change things. That's one way of looking at it. But the extreme way that the Mekubalim look at it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as we say in our prayers, is Mechadesh B'tuvo B'chol Yom Tamid Ma'aseh V'Reshis, that God is constantly renewing the act of creation on a daily basis. And indeed, not only on a daily basis, but also on a constant basis, every single moment. That is to say, that if God were to cease to focus his attentions or to be knowledgeable of our universe, even for a moment, then our universe would cease to exist, because the only existence that our world has is predicated on God's awareness and tutelage of our universe. So I want to make sure that we're clear on this, that there are a number of ways to view a system which was created, of this physical universe that was created by Hashem. Either Hashem, one extreme is he created the world and then left us to our own devices, or Hashem created the world and enters in and out of this of the interests of this world as on an as-needed basis, meaning that things run as the way that they're supposed to, but when Hashem needs to split a Red Sea, for example, or Hashem needs to save a particular tzaddik from a bullet that's about to hit him, then Hashem will intervene, but under normal circumstances, Hashem will not intervene. And the other extreme is to say that Hashem is constantly involved on a constant basis, is continuously interventive, because if God were not constantly involved in our universe, even for one moment, then our universe would cease to exist. Because after all our universe is really a creation or a construct of God's thoughts. And if God removes himself even for a moment, then our universe ceases to exist. So those are three different ways of looking at it. The first way is probably unacceptable to Jewish thought. And this is really what Rabbi Yehuda Halevi is going to come and try to deflect. And that is that it's really not acceptable to suggest that Hashem created the universe and then left. Even in the science of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi's time, such a theory is perhaps acceptable, because after all, once the laws of nature have been put into motion, then what do you need God anymore? But we'll see that that's completely unacceptable from a Judaic standpoint. Because after all, if God is unaware or is uninvolved in our universe, then what's the purpose of anything that we do? If Hashem is not aware and is not involved and is not receptive to the actions that we do, then it really serves no purpose at all. Just to add just a level of complexity to it, we are at a distinct disadvantage over the time of Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi. What do you mean? What do I mean by we're at a distinct disadvantage? What I mean to say is that since the advent of Newtonian physics in the 17th century, or even the 16th century, it's no longer necessary for there to be a God running the world. In other words, what I mean to say is like this: up until the late Middle Ages or the beginning of the Renaissance period, the only way that man could account for the fact that the earth does not just fall into the sun and that things why do things continue working the way that they're supposed to work? Why does the earth continue spinning? And why is it that when you throw things up, they always fall down? What causes the laws of physics to continue to operate in the way that they do? The only way that man could come to a conclusion about this was through concluding that there is what's known as a teleos, a sentience that supervises the way things work in the universe. Teleology is a term that's used today when religious scientists talk about intelligent design. You know that term, intelligent design? Intelligent design means that we accept the possibility of evolution, but we posit that evolution took place through a maker or through a creator who guided the process of evolution. Because the only way that things could have evolved the way that they, to the point that they did today, was through some kind of sentience, some kind of conscious effort done by someone of intelligence, some being of intelligence, to bring us to the point where we are today. So, in the times of Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, the only way to account for how things continue functioning the way that they do, and that things just don't fall apart, and the laws of science continue working, and nature continues operating the way it does, is that there has to be some sentience that's controlling all of these things. Why have things changed since then? Things have changed since then because there was a new model in the world of physics that said that Newton came up with this idea that it's possible to believe in a God that wound up the clock at the beginning of creation, and then the clock is still running. Because once you come up with laws of physics, like gravity and centrifugal force, then it's possible for our planet to revolve around the sun and for its orbit not to decay and for the Earth to crash into the sun based upon a clock that was wound up. In other words, God put into motion an Earth that is perfectly balanced between gravitational force and centrifugal force, such that the Earth can continue revolving in its orbit and everything can continue according to the laws of physics. You don't need God to control that anymore. It's possible for things just to run on their own without some sentient outside party controlling the way things run. So if for example, I have a set of model trains and I plug my model trains and there's enough electrical current, I can just turn the switch on and the trains can continue running without my making sure that I don't have to constantly move my hand to make sure that the trains are moving. The trains can move on their own. Before man discovered Newtonian physics and realized that there's a certain way of explaining how things can run on their own, the idea was that there's a God out there who's moving the train. Because that's the only way that we can account for how the bodies continue their state of being in motion. Am I making myself clear? So the question then is, what's the difference between Greek philosophy and Judaism. And this is a very important difference, and I'll get to your question in just a second. This is what's going to make all the difference in the world, which is why Rabbi Yehuda Halevi has to combat Aristotle. The difference is as follows. For Aristotle, there is a God. And for, like we learned, you remember we saw Maimonides had said in the Mor Nebuchim that Aristotle also believed in God. He believed in a God, not necessarily a God of creation, but that there's a God nonetheless. What's the difference? The difference is this. God is in charge of making sure that everything continues to run. The trains are running, and there's a God who's moving his hands to make sure that everything is running the way it's supposed to be. Everything continues in motion. But God is powerless to change the course of nature, because God is a being who is sentient, who has a consciousness, but because of that essence, the essence of God, the way that God is made up in his perfect makeup, that God is incapable of changing the way things are. The very way things are now, there's no way to change that. And furthermore, there's no way for this God to insert itself or himself into our world and sort of mush things up and mess and change them around. There's no way for the God of Aristotle to come into our world at a given point in time and split the Red Sea. The laws of science, the laws of nature, are being controlled by the sentient being, but he is forced to run the universe according to those laws of nature without being able to change them, because it is the essence of God that defines what he does, how he emanates, that's the term emanation, how he emanates the laws of nature. And this is what Rabbi Yehuda Halevi has to combat. It's what the Rambam has to combat. The Rambam has this very, very big debate with Aristotle in the Mor Nebuchim, even while at the same time showing great deference and acknowledgement to the truths of Greek philosophy. The big machloikas, the big debate that the Rambam has with Aristotle is regarding the rules of prophecy. See, Aristotle believes in some kind of prophecy too, at least according to Maimonides and some Islamic philosophers as well. That what does a person have to do in order to be able to get some kind of divine connection? He has to prepare himself intellectually and meditate and do a number of different things in order to achieve prophecy. But for Aristotle, because there's this constant emanation that is unchanging from the God of up high, if you know the right ingredients that you need in order to plug into that divine source, you just take your electrical cord and you plug it into that divine source, and immediately you become a prophet, as long as you know how to do it. But for the Rambam, and for Rabbi Yehuda Halevi as well, it's not so simple. The God of Aristotle is uniform and unchanging and immutable, just like the universe that emanates from that God. But for the God of Judaism, there is a God who's not only sentient and aware and controlling, but also can change at his whim how he's going to interact with our universe. So if Hashem wants for a person who plugs in his cord to the prophetic source, and that God decides that that person should not be a prophet and should not have prophecy, that person will not have prophecy. And that's why that's how the Rambam explains why some people are prophets and some people are not. For Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, he doesn't discuss prophecy in that way. We'll talk about how Rabbi Yehuda Halevi talks about prophecy later on. But for Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, the world does not run based upon a nature, a God of nature, who has no active interaction with our world. That's the God of Aristotle. The God of the Jews is a God who says, I'm controlling everything constantly. I'm constantly interactive with our world, and I can change things as they need to be changed. And that's why we're going to get into a discussion of what the definition of the word nature is, which is what are going to be part of our reading today. So that's point number one. And point number two, which is very much related to this, is that once we get into a discussion of what nature is and what nature is not according to Judaism, because according to Judaism there really is no such thing as nature. Nature is basically the way Hashem set up our universe, but Hashem can change that nature at any time. So there really is no law of nature that cannot be violated. Anything can be violated once Hashem decides it. When we appreciate the fact that Hashem is directly involved with the physical world at every single moment and is constantly aware of what's going on in this world, then every physical act that we do takes on a much greater meaning. Everything that we do is important because Hashem is watching and Hashem is interacting with our universe. So I push the buttons of the physical world by the things that I do, and that has a direct effect on how Hashem interacts with our universe. Because Hashem cares, Hashem is involved, and Hashem wants there to be an interaction between himself and the physical universe, and he based that relationship on how we handle the physical universe. What we do makes a difference to Hashem and makes a difference to the way that he interacts with our world. So you see how these discussions are all interrelated. The more that Hashem is involved with our world on a constant basis, the more important the mitzvahs that we do become. So everything that we do in life makes a difference. That's really the import of what we're going to be discussing today. Did you want to?
Yeah, just a quick question. What kind of physics did you say it was, like the theory from Newton and Rosen, in the 17th century, what was it called?
Newtonian physics. Okay. Newtonian, that's the basic modern physics, which basically says that there are different forces that were set into motion at the beginning of the creation of these laws of nature. And once those laws were set into motion, it doesn't become necessary for there to be a sentient, an aware God to constantly control them. Okay? But realize that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi is living before that period of time, but he still has to contend with Aristotle, who says that even though there is a sentience that is controlling everything that's going on, that sentience can't change anything, is not even aware of what we're doing down here, but is rather just emanating to make sure that the world continues to run. Yes?
Was this the basis of the philosophy or religion of deism in the 18th century that many of the
I'm not sure. I don't know.
Thomas Jefferson, I think, was a deist.
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't know whether that's, if that's a relation. That's an interesting question. But you may want to do some research and let us know what you discover. Yeah, that's an interesting question. Okay. So we're up to paragraph 68 on page 86. 68 on 86. And we need a reader for today. Who? We need a volunteer. Thanks. Just loud so the camera picks you up.
The Kuzari said, I have been sufficiently convinced in this area. If our relationship continues, I will ask you later to provide me with stronger proof. In the meantime, return to your main point. I do not understand how you were able to accept the following ideology. You believe that the creator of all physical bodies, life forces, souls, and angels, who is well beyond the comprehension of angelic creatures, let alone the human senses, communes by a man with this physical world, despite the fact that, as a result of its physicality, it is lowly and disgraceful. Granted, the creations in this world are fascinating, but if you want to suggest that it is man's sophisticated makeup that allows God to communicate with him, then why limit God's connection to man alone? Even in the smallest of insects, God's unfathomable wisdom is apparent.
I did insert a lot into this translation. I just want you to know there's a number of ways to understand the way that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi has the Kuzari phrasing this question. But basically the idea that is inherent within what the Khazar king is asking is, how is it that you could have a world that is so dissimilar to the Creator? This world is so lowly, and by virtue of its very physical makeup, it is so unlike and so distant from God. How could God, who is so perfect and so disconnected from anything that is physical, how could you in Judaism insert God into this world? It's almost like suggesting, like for us in Judaism, it is completely incompatible to suggest that God has any physical form. Ein lo dumus haguf, ein no guf, right? Christians believe that God could have one time occupied physical form. That for us is is unacceptable, right? That God could have at one time occupied physical form, because Hashem, by virtue of his definition of being Hashem, cannot be a physical body. But yet, what we're being challenged with is almost of the, is just like one degree of separation. How can you, granted you believe that God is non-physical, how can a non-physical God insert himself into a physical world and interact with it via man? In other words, basically what you say is that the things that man does in this world make a difference and cause God to react to this world in different ways. If a person shakes a lulav, then Hashem brings rain. If a person davens, then Hashem gives parnasa. Yeah? How can that be? How can you suggest that what we do in this world causes God to interact with our world in this way? And if you're going to suggest that the way that God interacts with our world is because he, after all, is the creator, then why should a human being have any more of an influence than even the smallest ant? Hashem created a human being just like he created an ant. So if a human being's physical behavior makes a difference, then why doesn't the ant's physical behavior make a difference? That's the question. So basically he's saying, mimo nafshach, like we say in Talmudic parlance, is no matter how you look at it, it's difficult to understand. Number one, on the one hand, to suggest that God interacts with our world is almost a diminution of God's stature. That's what you're suggesting. You're suggesting that God is lower than he really should be, because you're suggesting that he can insert himself in a physical world. But on the other hand, even if you're going to convince me that God can insert himself and interact with the physical world, how is it that man is unique, that he causes God to interact in different ways? After all, he's no different from any other creation of Hashem. So if it's the fact that God created all things in the physical world that causes him to interact, then why should human beings be any different from any other creature? That's the way that the question is phrased. Clear? Good. Let's go on. Lindsay?
The rabbi said, this does not require a lengthy answer. The wisdom that you see involved in the creation of an ant, for example, do you attribute this wisdom to some star or other heavenly force other than God, who is truly omnipotent and exact, and who provides each and everything with its exact properties?
This is the question. Do you attribute this wisdom to some star or other heavenly force other than God? How is it that after centuries of ants crawling on this earth, the ants are all the same? And how is it that they have certain physical properties that are common to all ants? And how is it that all ants manage to live in colonies and display such a wisdom and that there's such an intricacy within the construction of an ant that no human being, no matter how sophisticated, can ever duplicate the creation of an ant? Right? So what do you attribute that to? How did that ant get here? And what is it that constantly makes ants continue being such exquisite and elegant creatures? So what is the Kuzari answer?
The Kuzari said, these properties are attributed to nature.
Go ahead.
The rabbi asked, and what exactly is nature? The Kuzari said, it is a certain force within the universe which, I grant you, I do not understand clearly. But the wise scientists know precisely what it is. The rabbi said, their understanding of nature is just as nebulous as ours. Aristotle defined it a bit by stating that nature is the underlying cause of all phenomena which cause change within a physical object, provided that these changes are intrinsic, not incidental, to the object in question.
Now here's getting a little bit technical, using certain philosophical terminology that I don't want to spend any time on. It's if you want to research it further on your own time, you're more than welcome to. When we study Aristotelian logic and Aristotelian physics and metaphysics, we understand that these are very specific terms that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi is referring to. But nature basically is a system or a set of laws that were placed into motion that controls how things change and how things move and how things function in our universe. Continue, 74.
The Kuzari said, it seems as if Aristotle is saying that when an object changes intrinsically, that is, it displays motion when it was previously stationary or vice versa, there must be some cause for the change, and this cause is called nature.
Continue.
The rabbi said, That is the outcome of his very intricate and refined distinction between things which operate incidentally and those that operate via nature. The issues involved have fascinated many a philosopher, but this is what it boils down to.
Okay, so that's what how Aristotle defines nature as saying the certain force that remains undefined that causes things to have motion, causes things to change within our universe. And they have to, these rules conform to a certain set of laws which make those changes intrinsic or something that is basically necessary for this particular component of nature to display according to the laws of nature. Fine. 76.
The Kuzari said, if so, then I see that we have been misled by these wise men into thinking that nature works in an intelligent fashion to affect creation, just like the Creator. That is why we use phrases like wise nature and active nature, when in reality we are referring to the Creator.
Now, the word creator over here is the term that the Kuzari uses. But remember, Aristotle would not use the word creator. He would use the term prime cause or some other kind of term to talk about the God that is emanating these rules of nature that cause things to change and to move and to for creation to progress. But the bottom line is that everything ultimately emanates from some sentient being that is the cause of everything that we see, all phenomena that occur throughout our universe. And that's the point where the rabbi wanted the Kuzari to get to realize that there's no difference in that respect from us and from Aristotle. Everything, all the things, all physical phenomena that we see in the world ultimately emanate from God. So now, if that's the case, then let's see where are we different from Aristotle. And this is paragraph 77 on page 89.
The rabbi said, correct. There is a different definition of nature which we do find acceptable. The elements, the sun, the moon, the stars, all have intrinsic properties, such as their degree of heat, cold, moisture, and dryness. They behave in a certain fashion, not because they are sentient beings, but because they are confined intrinsically to certain attributes by God. All intelligent patterns within distinct things, such as form, size, and the ability to reproduce, are attributable to the one omnipotent and precise God alone. Nevertheless, one who identifies these elements in celestial bodies, which affect physical objects through temperature and the like, by the name nature, is not really doing any harm, provided that he does not ascribe any sentience to them.
Okay, so let's just hold it there for just a second. So basically, if you understand nature as being a set of rules that God put into motion, that defines how things work in this world and that every single component of the physical universe has intrinsic properties, like human beings have certain properties of intelligence and locomotion and so forth, and animals have another intrinsic property, and planets have another intrinsic property, and rocks have another intrinsic property, then you're not doing any harm. You're basically saying that everything conforms to a set of rules that Hashem put into motion, put into place. The only area that we would disagree with some philosophers is that these philosophers ascribe an independent intelligence to nature itself. What is nature? So sometimes certain philosophical writings, in very poetic or metaphorical terms, will talk about Mother Nature. We'll talk about nature as being an independent sentience apart from the Creator, apart from God. So Rav Yehuda Levi just wants to make sure that we don't fall into that trap of thinking that's a possibility. I don't think he's ascribing that particular idea to Aristotle. He's ascribing it to different philosophers who would sometimes poetically take liberties, which is what we find among the Arabic philosophers of Rav Yehuda Levi's time, is that they would poetically describe nature in terms of some angelic being, some kind of sentient being that operates with some level of autonomy. He says that's not acceptable. Everything operates directly by the hand of Hashem in this world. Fine, okay, so therefore he says, to cite an analogy, just because you may know how things work doesn't mean that you're in charge of making them work that way. So let's see the example that he gives, to cite an analogy. Go ahead.
To cite an analogy, we know that when a man and woman reproduce offspring that has human form, is not because of their sentience to create human form that this form was created, Rather, they merely produce the unformed matter, which is then formed by the wise forming God.
Okay, so this analogy could be extended to so many different things as well. When a man and a woman procreate and they have a baby, was the baby formed because their intelligence sort of consciously now creating a child, and the mother is now that she becomes pregnant, she's thinking about how the fetus is going to be formed in the womb? No, she's totally not in control of the gestation of this fetus and how the fetus forms in her womb. They basically utilize the rules of science, the rules of nature, that says that when the sperm meets the egg, there's a conception and there's fertilization of the egg, and then nature takes over. There's no sentience involved. We don't need to be intelligent. We don't need to intelligently be involved in the process of when you plant a seed in the ground. It's not your mind that controls the growth of the plant. Right? When scientists send a spaceship out into space using the laws of physics, it's not that their mind is controlling those rules. They're merely harnessing those rules. And sometimes we don't even know how those rules work. And so the same thing is true when it comes to nature. Hashem put the rules of nature into place, and there's no independent sentience that controls those rules of nature. Hashem is, we can harness those rules of nature if once we discover what they are, but we're not in control, and there's no other body, there's no other collective mind that is in control of the laws of nature. Okay, so let's continue. Do not doubt.
Do not doubt that there are divine influences that permeate the objects of this lowly world, provided that the objects are prepared to receive them. This idea is the root of faith and the root of charity.
Okay, and this leads, Rebbe, and this is where we're going to hold it for today as far as our reading goes. Because this, we're going to get into the root of the matter of what he was trying to present to us. The fact of the matter is that since Hashem is controlling the laws of nature, and that there's no intermediary force, it's not that Hashem basically removes himself from the world and leaves it up to some lower sentience to control the world. Hashem is controlling the laws of nature actively and constantly. Then there is divine influence in everything that exists in the world, which means that when we start pushing the buttons of nature in a way that is prescribed by God, we create God to react to this world in different ways. Because Hashem is directly involved in the workings of our universe, what we do makes a difference. And this, he says, is the root of faith and the root of heresy, which means that if you believe this, if you believe that Hashem is directly involved in the workings of our physical world, this will either cause you to become a person of great faith, but it could also cause you to become an apikores as well. Now, why is that? Why would that cause you to become a heretic as well? So it depends what you do with this knowledge. It depends how you implement this knowledge in the real world, and that's going to be our topic of discussion for next time. Okay, good.